Good day to my listeners. I would like to present my speech on multipolarity and AFPAC situation. We now live in the epochal time of a major global geopolitical turning point. In fact, it is a major historical turning point in the recorded history of all humanity. Over the past 500 years, during the European Renaissance, human civilization has developed beyond all precedent in the spheres of scientific, technological, social, cultural, political, and economic capabilities. Yet most of this has been abused because it has been facilitated via illegitimate and violent strategies and has served the purpose of a limited corner of the world. That is the continent of Europe and its North American and Australasian appendages across the North Atlantic and South Pacific oceans, respectively. Although the progress has been great, its future has now become untenable due to the inherent structural flaws and injustices which have facilitated this progress thus far. We need to search for solutions, because progress is a human birthright and it has to be safeguarded and streamlined. But it must operate in a manner which is conducive to stable growth, the collective good and human dignity. The problem facing humanity and its planetary home right now is how to surmount this procedural obstacle without bringing destruction upon all that physically exists here. Eurasia is the largest landmass on planet Earth. It is a supercontinental geographic structure, the vastness of which has been racially and culturally, and to a lesser extent climatically, apportioned by humans into the smaller European portion of the west and the larger Asiatic portion to its east. That is to say that unlike other continents that exist on Earth, the distinction between Europe and Asia is not geographic. Per se, in political geography, all other regions of the Earth, including continents large and small, are regarded as appendages of Eurasia and its influence. Eurasia is the pivotal foundation of all human history, because it has hosted the most numerous and influential human racial category. That is to say, the Indo-Europeans, who comprise 46% of the total world population. It also hosts other major human racial and civilizational categories, such as the Mongolic, Semitic, and Turkic, etc. Although the very vastness of each of these human categories has given rise to complexities and complications on all levels, even within the Indo-European superstructure itself, it has also engendered the growth of long-standing natural, cultural, and ethnic structures which refuse to die. They continue to serve as the bedrock and underpinning of civilization. In present-day terms, Russia is the only nation-state which truly characterizes the Eurasian principle. Not only is it the largest entity in Eurasia by area, it is also the country with the largest landmass on Earth. Western Europe has been in the vanguard of human development for the last five to six centuries. It has used a system of mercantile colonialism and imperialism with which to procure raw resources from the rest of the world, which was not endowed with such capabilities, and transport that back to its hinterlands, where it was transformed into wealth and power. This mercantilist colonialism created differentiated spheres of political and administrative influence in exploited areas, which rode roughshod over the more ancient, underlying, organic, regional, political, ethnic, and cultural realities. Although the colonizing powers invariably and of necessity left a lot of modernizing influences in such territories, it was not done with a positive intent. and only to facilitate their stranglehold. Such modernizing influences amounted to patinas which were kept in place directly by the means of the colonizing power or its local proxy elites, who were also propped up by them. Although colonialism has purportedly vanished in its overall form of direct occupation, the procedural modalities have been changed, and it still exists in most parts of the world in a more indirect and less visible form. The 20th century saw the peaking of the process of unequal human progress as engendered by the European Renaissance. We saw the arrival and the proliferation of motor transport, electricity, aircraft, atomic power, space travel, and the computer age more or less within the last century. Of course, it is outside the scope of this report to dilate on the nature and significance of such developments. The mode of overall human progress and development initiated in the West or Europe took human history by storm, and thinkers and philosophers thereafter sought to make this process fairer and universalize it for the common human benefit, initially within Europe itself. There were many such socio-political concepts, and the trends referred to as socialism. And the major trend in this regard was Marxism, which was initially put into practical political action via the concepts of Lenin in Russia. This led to the establishment of the Soviet Union at the end of 1922, after a political revolution in the Russian Empire toppled the feudal Tsarist regime in 1917. The Soviet Union may indeed have been technically an empire by virtue of its administrative and geographical characteristics, but it was a unique state in many respects. A state which literally spanned the vast extremities of both Europe and Asia, Eurasia in its truest sense. It was a state consisting of many culturally demarcated regions and ethnicities, huge and tiny, with each being guaranteed its own sovereign rights and identity. It had a benevolent and fraternal Promethean philosophy at its heart to empower the common man and provide him or her all necessary facilities for physical and mental development. In return, each citizen was co-opted to play his or her due role in society according to the scope of his or her own capacity. The USSR took into account the geographic, cultural, and ethnic realities of its territories and shaped its policies accordingly. Policies were no longer shaped by the greed or selfish interests of coercive classes or categories, be they economic or racial. Of course, the traditional power brokers in Western Europe who held the stranglehold over the world's wealth and the rest of humanity could not stand this state of affairs. And in the 20th century, especially after 1945, is the story of the conflict between the paramount Western power, which I term as the Second British Empire of the USA, and the Soviet Union, which was centered but benevolently on Russia. If Russia is the historical representative of Byzantium, then Western Europe is, in most ways, a continuation of the Western Roman Empire. In 1992, a set of clever moves by the Americans took advantage of some structural flaws in the USSR and brought about its collapse. For the next 30 years, the whole world witnessed the naked reality of Western intentions as they became the sole arbiters of the globe once more, and arrogantly declared themselves to be the end of history. We need this to study history and the natural flow of its processes in order to formulate strategies on all levels for the formulation of Eurasian structures and coordination. This will be the most well-founded scientific and practical form of approach. Here I must insert some views about the country I was born in and which I am currently a citizen of, Pakistan. Pakistan as a state is a pure creation of British imperialist geopolitical strategy, and as such represents no viable ethnic, cultural, or even economic reality. It is a rentier state controlled by a very corrupt, militarized proxy elite and depends almost entirely on Western aid for its continued existence. Long-standing Anglo-Western geopolitical interests in the area, such as their great game strategy to counter Russia in South Asia and the Middle East, have changed over the past decade as the US-NATO Atlanticist combine encountered defeat in Afghanistan and confrontation with Russia shifted directly to the European theatre. Moreover, Pakistan suffers from its own illness of endemic corrupt dysfunction, and a globally declining West can no longer afford to pour in billions to keep the robber elites and their artificial country propped up. Pakistan has therefore become a diseased liability for its former masters, but its ruling elite doesn't seem to realize that. Russia and China, while having asserted themselves globally in the same period, have offered Pakistan many arrangements, including a respectable alternative in the form of CPEC, the China-Pakistan Economic Corridor, since 2015. But events in this year seem to demonstrate amply that the slavish Pakistani ruling classes prefer to remain the faithful and lowly servants of the Anglo-American powers, even though the latter keep distancing themselves like a diseased pet which is no longer wanted. It is amply evident that the Pakistani ruling classes know that they can do no better and are content to remain slaves. There is public outrage at this attitude, but even so, the public does not seem to be in any position to affect outcomes. I will elaborate on that later. Perhaps this is all that the reality of an artificially contrived state can afford to offer. The position of this country is becoming increasingly critical by the day. In my own self, I embody a classic Eurasianist combination in my being, in my very being, as a Pakistani Tajik on my father's side and being English on my mother's. My makeup is truly Eurasian in every aspect, and I had to discover the underlying secrets of this combination in order to render my own being stable and viable for continued and purposeful existence. How fortunately, this lifelong internal and very personal quest at the core of my being has borne fruit, and this typification represents the man of the future. It must be noted that the structure of the USSR embodied the first instance of true Eurasian philosophy in modern times. Although the USSR no longer exists in name, we are still in possession of its concepts and legacies. We can now learn better from past mistakes of any nature, be they political, doctrinal, economic, or even ethnic. We can create a larger and more encompassing Eurasian polity with multiple centers of power in a spirit of benevolent cooperation and decency. Civilization stands for such values, not the sophisticated pillage and rapine which the Anglo-Saxon world has sadly come to typify. The time of change in the world has once more arrived when Western globalism has fallen prey to its own greedy tendencies and has overreached itself, wreaking havoc on humanity and its planet alike. The two major Eurasian superpowers of Russia and China have once more awakened to their historic role. The sad aspect is that a war seems inevitable in correcting such injustices and deliberate imbalances, as the West will not relinquish its stranglehold, and the destruction wrought by such a war will now also be without precedent in known human history. Now I will specifically comment on the issues of the Afghanistan-Pakistan region, to which I refer by the term AFPAC, which is an American term, but nevertheless a useful term. The world now stands at one of the most critical cyclic times in the epoch of human history, as massive powers representing good and evil, stand in final array against each other and are about to clash with consequences of which there is no documented precedence. Ladies and gentlemen, if the lights go off, this is one of the power cuts of Pakistan, and I will have to pause the video and begin it once they return in an hour's time. However, I will continue speaking till that time. Sometimes it happens, but sometimes it doesn't happen, but that is an exception. More often than not, it follows that schedule of 1 hour light and 1 hour load shedding, as I call it. In order to explain this situation and the role of our region in this, in the matter, we must first of all shed light on this region comprising Pakistan and Afghanistan, collectively termed as AFPAC at one time in American State Department terminology during the administration of President Obama. These are the names of two failed and failing nation states respectively, the existence of both being rooted in arbitrary regional restructuring by Anglo-American imperialism for the purpose of furthering their nefarious geopolitical and strategic regional objectives. Afghanistan is a wilderness created from a sized-down version of an unstable 18th century Persianate Afghan empire created in Lower Khorasan after the unexpected demise of Persian Emperor Nader Shah